irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Question Reality, the Question Reality radio show. I'm Priscilla Leona, producer and host of this show, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Now, for 13 years, we have been providing our audience with entertainment industry career advice. Now, this show is for you if you are questioning your career reality about pursuing a career in show business, or if you're already working in the entertainment industry and you just need some tips, advice, or resource information on how to elevate your career status. Now, the guest on our show include Emmy winners, Grammy Award winners, Tony Award winners. We have reality TV stars and a wide variety of working show professionals, which include film, television, music, radio producers and directors. And we have casting directors and literary agents and casting agents and PR agents and talent managers, screenwriters and publicists and actors and comedians. I feel like saying, oh my, singers and novelists, script supervisors. And we also have entertainment lawyers that come on towards the end of the year, because if you are pursuing a career in the entertainment industry, as with any profession, you really need to have a lawyer on retainer. Now, not LegalZoom. Now, there's nothing against LegalZoom, but I just had a situation where someone decided to start a .org via LegalZoom, and now they're in all kinds of trouble. So you really do need to put your pennies together and be able to at least get a consultation. So we provide entertainment lawyers, and we ask we give you free advice, so you can write in all of your entertainment questions and they answer it. And usually, again, that's in the month of December. Now, if you missed any of our shows, here are three ways that you can listen to the free shows, past shows, rather. We have the free mobile apps, of course, you can get from the App Store and the Google Play Store. You can listen to us on iHeartRadio. We're on iTunes, Amazon Podcasts. We're on Google, Audible.com, Stitcher.com. Just type in Question Reality, and there we are. All over. The first thing you'll see, big old page. I think I go three pages deep, so you'll find us. You can also listen to any of the past shows on our archive page. That means that you'll listen directly from the website that you're listening to us on right now, which is latalkradio.com. So just look for the show title, Question Reality. And you can also search for my name, Priscilla Leonda. What the heck's my last name? Leonda? Is that a new pronunciation? Priscilla Leona. I can't even say my name. Well, you know what's happening. I decided to sage today. And I've been coughing and choking, and I think I'm a little lightheaded. I don't know what. I'm always looking for new things and holistic things and smells, and decided to sage. The whole house smells like marijuana. I had no idea that sage smelled like marijuana. I'm sure that the neighbors are going to be calling and sending the cops over here. But I think I got the windows open. So anyway, I'll be mispronouncing things during the whole show. So be prepared. Now, I want to ask you guys for a small favor. We really kindly ask that you please subscribe to our podcasts, which are via the Apple Podcasts. And also, if you could give us a little thumb up on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn. Now, I talk a lot on this show about branding, how important it is to keep your branding consistent. Pick a name and let it be the same name for Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn, because when people go to do a Google search, they don't want to see Sweetie Pie Tina number 33. Okay. Who the hell are you? You gotta pick a name and stick with it. So even though our show is Question Reality Radio Show, I have branded myself by my name. Very easy, because everyone knows me by Priscilla Leona. So please go on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram and look for Priscilla Leona, L-E-O-N-A. And give me a little thumb. Who the hell doesn't need a little thumb? A thumb or a finger, but whatever one works on your hand, a thumb or a finger, I need it. Okay, finally, if you want to be booked on our show or refer someone to be a guest to promote themselves, to showcase their projects or products, and just help listeners by providing career advice, go to our official website. Now, listen very carefully. We're going to do like a whole switcheroo here. Our official website is questionrealityradioshow.com. Not the website you're listening to us on now, which is obviously latalkradio.com. This is the website where we air our show. So again, go to the website questionrealityradioshow.com. And that's also where you can see our annual guest schedule. So you might want to go there and take a peek at who the upcoming guests are and check out their site. So for example, if you want to know what goes on as a script supervisor, you would look and say, oh, hey, Jane Doe's coming on. She's a script supervisor. I want to know what the behind the scene workings are of a script supervisor. So that's where you would go to see that, questionrealityradioshow.com. Okay, questionrealityradioshow.com. And it's real easy. Just go to the contact page. All we need is your name, email, title, and website. That is it. Oh my gosh, that was so long. But you needed to hear it. Okay, so very exciting. This guest today is, in my opinion, he is a heartthrob. He is a hunky guy. I hope his wife isn't upset. I'm sure she's heard it a million times from people all over the world. Everybody who knows him already knows this, so it's not like I'm saying anything's not true. But not only is he a gorgeous man, but he's the whole package, because his name, well, first of all, let's tell who it is. They're like, who? Eugene Napoleon. Now, he is the CEO of Nap Vision Entertainment. He is a two-time best-selling author. He is a documentary filmmaker. He's an ex-professional football player. He is an award-winning special education teacher and a motivational speaker. My God, this man is so impressive. He's had extremely successful career transitions. So if you are hoping to have a long, fulfilling career like he has, this interview today will provide you with, I feel, he's going to be motivational, he's going to be inspirational, and he's going to really probably pump you up because he used to be, you know, a football player. So he's like pumping you up. He's going to provide great aspiration, I feel, towards your next career move, possibly into the world of entertainment, in the world of the entertainment industry. So without further ado, let's welcome Eugene Napoleon. Are you there, Eugene?
I am here, Priscilla. Thank you so much for the introduction. I appreciate it.
Well, you are just a man that we all appreciate. My God. Welcome to the show. I've been wanting to say this. I wrote this down. Welcome to the show, Eugene Napoleon, a.k.a. Jersey number 33 from Jersey City, New Jersey. How many people say that?
I love it. Thank you.
I love it, too. It rolls off the tongue. Very, very, very easy to say. And I want to start. There's so many things to talk about because, my God, we could be here for, I would think, 8 hours talking about how successful you are and what an inspiration and a motivation you are to the world. But let's start at the beginning. So as we said, you were a professional football player for, I believe, the Orlando Predators and yes. Tampa Bay Storm. And I wanted to get the, because this was a question from Susan of Locust City, Nebraska. And she said, dear Eugene, what was the reason you started playing football? So I thought, you know, that's a simple, basic question. Thank you, by the way. And I thought we would start with that question.
That's an awesome question. It's ironic because in the earlier years, my mom did not want me to play football. I was a scrawny little skinny kid, and she didn't want me to get hurt. It was actually a good friend of mine, Calvin Spivey, who I watched those guys practice all the time when I was much, much younger. I think I had to be somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 8 or 9 years old. And it intrigued me that, you know, these guys were fast and, you know, it was such a physical sport. I really wanted to play. So I remember not telling my mom that I was going to play. And I had my stepsister, Lisa Miller, she signed the permission slip for me to play. So my mom actually didn't know until the latter part of that particular week, right before the first game, that I was actually playing football. I would take my equipment over to my stepsister Lisa's house, which, and I would drop it off there, and she would clean it for me. So by the time my mom found out, the coach had to come and explain to her. He couldn't, of course, promise her that I wouldn't get hurt. I mean, football is a contact sport, obviously. Right. But he did tell her, you have no idea. Your son is really good. He's the fastest kid on the team. The likelihood, you know, for them to hurt him, they got to catch him first. So that was really my introduction to it. My good friend was playing. I wanted to play. And I tell you, Priscilla, I thank God for it. I actually wound up being pretty good. So it worked out in the end. But that's how I started playing football.
Isn't that something? Wow. Yeah, because, I don't want to stereotype, but most boys do like sports of some kind, right? And usually when you're in school, it's football or baseball, right? So you would Absolutely. Think most boys are like, hey, you know, I want to be, because they're like, hey, if I'm a football, the girls are going to come running and the ladies. Not, but in high school, that's what you're thinking about, partially at least. Okay, so this question comes from Tim from Jamaica, Queens. Thank you, Tim. He said, hey, Eugene, what challenges did you come across transitioning from being a pro football player into each of your other various professions? Wow, that's a long question, Tim. All right, if you want to answer.
That's a great question.
Okay, go.
That's a great question, because you know what it is? A lot of times I was fortunate not to look at football as my identity and to look at it as something that I was actually good at. So I never thought, you know, that football validated me. I enjoyed playing it. It was a blessing. So during my career, I always looked at other things that I always wanted to do. One was motivational speaking. One was I started, you know, jotting notes down when I was in college in terms of writing a manuscript for a book or things of that nature. So when it was time to transition into something else, I had a few other passions and a few of the things that I wanted to accomplish. So I had like a little bit of a to-do list. And the one thing I will say about professional sports and athletes, and I don't care what the sport is, when I retired from playing, I was fortunate to go to Wall Street. And from there, I started a sports agency where I was a sports agent for 10 years. And the first thing I always tell people, while you're playing, you need to start thinking about what's the exit strategy and how are you going to transition into the next thing, because you're not going to be a professional athlete forever. So I was fortunate to have people in my life early on that kind of talked about that and made sure I understood that, my mom being one of them. So it wasn't that difficult to transition. You know, it's different for most people, but for me, it wasn't really that difficult to transition.
Wow. Now you got me on a whole nother train of thought. I'm going to come back to that because I feel that question is very important to expand on. But the next question comes from Richard from Laurel, Maryland. And he said, oh, he feels comfortable enough to call you Gene. We don't know if Eugene goes by Gene, Richard, but okay. Hey, Gene, what are your strengths as both an athlete and a person?
That is an excellent question. I love that question. Let me, morals, having a good moral base and have that entrenched with faith. So for me, I'm gonna get a little bit deep and I'll answer it I'll answer it this way. My 9-year-old sister saved my life when I was 4 years old in one of the biggest house fires in Jersey City. And she gave her life for me, right? So when I got a little bit older to really start staying on that path of just living for the both of us, basically, and trying to do everything the right way. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I never got in heavy partying, never. And I don't know what beer tastes like. So I try to think things through on a way of, I didn't want her death to be in vain. So anything that I try to do, I try to do it at the best level possible. And I always say good business is always respected. So you do things with a good moral code. You do things, you know, from a good character perspective. So those, I believe, are my strengths. And every business that I ever got involved with, music, entertainment, whatever, sports, whatever it is, people that really know me, they know I'm going to do good business. You know, so that's what I really pride myself on, just being the best person I can possibly be.
And that you are, my friend Eugene. Now, the next question I'm going to ask you is something that you had said that you wanted to talk about. How, in your opinion, how has high school and big time college recruiting changed over the years? Not knowing that there was a change, I wouldn't know. So take it from a perspective of someone who's listening and we didn't know it changed. We didn't know it went from this to that. So maybe you could educate.
Definitely.
Us.
Definitely. When I was being recruited, and this is back in 1985, recruiting then was as simple as you're getting written up in the paper all the time. That's cool. Maybe word of mouth from coach to coach, you know, maybe some of the teams that you played against, their coach would talk about you and other college recruiters would come through and say, well, who's the best kid in your area? And that's how your name got out there. Now, it's a totally different game. Because of social media, recruiters don't even have to get on a plane and fly to different states anymore. They literally can go on the internet and look at these kids' highlights on YouTube. The money game as far as TV contracts with these huge Power Five conferences has changed. For instance, the SEC is probably the number one football conference collegiately in the country. Their TV contract is almost $1 billion. So back then when I was coming out of high school and going into college, the money was nowhere near the same. Now the networks have a lot more to do with bowl games and contributing to these huge conference TV contracts, as I stated, where if you're not part of a Power Five conference, if it's the Big 12, the SEC, the ACC, those type of Big 10, those type of conferences, those are huge conferences with huge TV contracts, which really do control a lot of these universities. It wasn't like that when I came out of high school going into college. So that's one huge way. And just the recruiting battles now, there's so much money involved with these universities at the top, these big time schools, you can lure kids in just because of the facilities and these multi-million dollar coaches that are making the contracts, that, you know, the salaries, they play such a major role on trying to get a 5-star, 4-star, 3-star recruit to their universities because of the financial gain that they get from it. So it's changed dramatically in that sense.
Now, I know that, again, please forgive me, I don't know that much about sports, but when I was watching football growing up, I know that there were a lot of athletes, and this was in sports in general, because my cousin was really into wrestling, and he was talking about how some of the players did that steroid thing, and then he said, oh, everybody in sports does it. So I don't know if that was true or not, but has, because of what you were just saying with these big companies involved, do they do more aggressive drug testing? And do athletes still do that anymore, as far as you know? And does, because I know a lot of people were having really a lot of medical issues from the steroid use. So how has that changed?
Absolutely. And as anything else, when you talk about finances and big money and gains on that other side of it, you're going to get athletes who feel as though they have to do whatever they need to do to get to that next level. when I was in high school, not so much our program. You know, I came from a high school where it wasn't to the point our coaches would not tolerate that. Now, did we participate and play against other schools who did, even back in the 80s? Yes. There were kids that was on steroids on the high school level and even at the collegiate level. Now, as years go by and you start to see the money that's involved in this, you do see that that's a major issue. It is unfortunate, and that's in every sport. So I'm hoping it'll get back to, and who knows if it will or if it won't, but I'm hoping that it'll get to a place where your natural ability will probably be more important than boosting your body to get to the next level because you feel that's what you have to do. There's a lot of athletes, and again, that's a personal thing, I believe, when you make that decision, but you got to understand, yeah, it does come with some serious issues health-wise after that. So, yeah. You know, I've seen it. I've seen it on both levels. I've seen kids that were tremendous without it, and unfortunately, I've seen it, you know, kids who made that choice, a personal choice. I wouldn't recommend that for any kid, any sport, any level, but unfortunately, people make the decisions.
Yeah, my friend Ben was a professional wrestler, like back in the day with Roddy Rowdy Piper and all, and he was really into the steroids. And later on in life, he was having uncontrollable muscle spasms, and it really messed him up bad. But he passed away since, and I don't know if that's a result of it. But he wrestled with all the greats, and he said that he passed away in 2014. So the last thing he was saying to us was that it is still rampant and that the companies do, corporations that recruit do overlook that. So I hope that they get back to just playing natural. But apparently, I don't know what the steroids do, but that really seems to make someone stronger on the field or whatever sport. So hopefully they'll get back. But okay, so let me ask you a question. Tell me about what your feelings are towards the importance of being a student first and an athlete second.
Absolutely. And I think that's the core of it. When I go out and I speak to young people and their parents, I always say there's a reason why it's called student athletes and not athlete students. You know, when you're being recruited and you're getting into college and you're making that choice of the university or college that you want to pick, you have to be a student first because you're not going to be able to play whatever that sport is forever. My high school coach, Frank Gardula, I love him. He used to always say to me, no matter how great of a player you're going to be, you're going to be a human being far longer than you're going to be a football player. Mm-hmm. So truly being a student should come first. Now, obviously, and unfortunately, there are times when some of the athletes, no matter what sport it is, they get a little bit twisted and they feel like that sport is going to carry them even when they're done playing, not understanding, if you're not a student, I don't care what it is, you have to understand, let's say contracts, let's say financial literacy, let's say all these different things. If you make it to the professional level in any sport, you've still got to be bright enough to understand contracts and how to manage your money. So getting into college and taking your studies seriously, probably to me is the most important thing. If you're a good football player, basketball player, baseball player, track, no matter what the sport is, but you are equally a good student or even a better student, you're going to do far better when your career is over if it's versus the other way around.
Exactly.
So I will always tell parents and kids, please take your studies seriously.
Yeah, what if you wanted to become an independent sports agent? For God's sake, you got to understand some sort of business. You got to have some sort of a business acumen, which brings me back to what you were talking about earlier. What was it like being a sports agent? So a lot of people honestly don't even know what a sports agent does. So maybe we could start with that question first. What do they do? And like, say, for example, there's high school kids, which I know there are listening right now, and they think, well, if I ever make it, what does a sports agent do, and why should I stay with a sports agent rather than becoming an independent free agent?
Sure. Sports agent typically is the person and or group of people that's going to look over your contract. They're going to negotiate your contract for you. They're going to help you find financial people to take care of your money. technically, they're going to also go out and get you endorsement opportunities and really manage, help to manage your career. That's what a good sports agent indoor agency is supposed to do. And as in any business, sometimes you find really good ones and sometimes you find really bad ones. So I always say, make sure that you're looking at the agency or the individual. Do your research. Take your time, do your research, because it there's so much money in these particular, you know, sports, that an agent's going to come in and they're going to tell you that you're the greatest thing since Swiss cheese, and you're the greatest thing since air.
Yeah.
And they're going to tell you everything that they think you want to hear in order to get your business. But at the same token, a good agent is going to tell you, or should tell you, let's talk about, again, your exit strategy first. Because I already know, obviously, if you're going to be a first or second round draft pick, you're going to make a lot of money. But the most important thing is, how can I get you? What's your goals? Not as an athlete, as a business person, you know, in working in your community, those sort of things, that becomes more prevalent than all the money you're going to make. Because it's obvious, if you're a first round pick, you're going to make tons of money. So without, you know, withstanding that, what can we do together that's going to help you be more productive within your community, and some of the other things that you're going to do off the field, some of the tangible things off the field? Those are some of the things for me as an agent or an agency they should be more focused with. Contract litigation, it is what it is. That stuff is already tailor-made, you know, it's capped at a certain level anyway. So let's start talking about focusing on the other stuff as well. Those things are important if you're going to go or sign with an agent.
Yeah, and they should be have the foresight to be able to say, I want to look for some commercial opportunities. I want to look for some acting opportunities. I want to look. They should be looking for things that are going to be great for you, like endorsement deals after the career, afterwards.
Absolutely.
So that, you know, when do you think an athlete should start learning about financial literacy? I would say like right in the womb, but you know, that's me. What do you think? what do you think?
I'm going to tell you something. I used to take our son Brandon over to Wall Street when he was about 5-6 years old. And really, I was fortunate because a business partner of mine had a son about 1 to 2 years older than Brandon. So I would bring him over and they would play with their cars on the floor and everything. And it was kind of cool just to get him around that type of language, that type of environment, to understand financial literacy. As you said, Priscilla, you are never too young to understand and learn about financial literacy and the importance of diversifying your financial portfolio, all those different things. Just the verbiage alone, mixed in with being around that environment, helps you. And then get into it as early as possible. I personally think, to be more realistic with that answer, if kids are learning about that probably elementary school into middle school, that's a good start. When I started teaching at the elementary school level, I had a partner of mine who would come in from Solomon Smith Barney at the time, and he was working with my kids and teaching them and their parents about penny stocks. And this was elementary school many years ago.
Yep.
I agree. You're never too young to learn about that.
I'm telling you, Eugene, this should be mandatory to start kids in the first grade. It is not something that's unrealistic. Look at how many teenagers are in debt. I mean, as soon as the credit card companies can send a teenager a credit card, they are sending it. And what happens? Next thing you know, you are in debt thousands and tens of thousands of dollars, and your life is ruined. The earlier you start teaching children, the better. And if they're not going to do it in schools, which I think they should, then the parents, you as a parent, need to do that for your child. It is only fair. It is like teaching them how to tie a shoe or read a clock. That is something that's so important, Eugene, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I know our grandson is only 3 months old, and my son and his wife, they already have a portfolio. They already have some things for him already lined up. He already has a little bank account. That's what it is. He's only 3 months old.
Oh,
but those are the things that you learn.
Yeah.
You know, Brandon learned that from my wife and I, and just talking to him over the years about how important that kind of stuff is. I agree with you. You're never too young to learn about how to take care of your money.
Absolutely. If you, as my grandmother used to say, if you fail to plan, then you better plan to fail. And I didn't get that as a child, but now I understand that it sounds like double talk, but it's true. Now, you know what I love? One of your quotes is to make sure, and I love this. I'm like, oh, what is he talking about? One of your quotes is to make sure that your plan B becomes your plan A. Now, I was taught, and I try to teach others, always have plan A, plan B, and plan C, especially for people in the entertainment industry who want to be actors and famous actors, famous singers. You got to have more than anyone, you've got to have plan A, B, and C, because A, you want to be a famous actor. What if that doesn't work? You better have a college education, and then you can have a career that, well, it's not my dream career, but at least I'm going to have a health plan and make money, and I'm going to, I don't mind it. And then plan C, you got to have something. Well, if you don't work, if you don't like plan B, what can you do that you can tolerate till you get to be a senior citizen, right? But people don't want to listen. They want to they don't want to listen to me. They just want to do plan A. So I've given up on it. But go ahead, Eugene.
Right. That was one of the things growing up in the inner city. And I think like really most areas, and you get in sports so young, the first thing, you know, young person would say, I'm going to be in the NBA, I'm going to be in the NFL, I'm going to be in Major League Baseball, or whatever the case may be. And they put so much focus and so much time and effort into that they don't develop a plan B or, you know, a plan C. So I always say, okay, I don't want to, you know, rain on anybody's parade, but here's the realistic part of it. At the time, you had four professional football leagues. In one high school in the state of New Jersey, there's more kids in that one high school than you had playing in four professional football leagues, right? So I would tell kids when I would go to speak, listen, let's look at it this way. Let's flip that scenario. What is it that you like that's outside of the sports realm? And a lot of them I found, some of them like writing, some of them like, you know, other business things, not necessarily just football, basketball, or baseball, or running track. Then I would tell them, well, why don't you let's do a 60-40 situation. Let's put 60% of your efforts into plan B, and let's put 40% into plan A. Let's just flip the roles a little bit, because 9 times out of 10, more realistically, you may fall into doing plan B or plan C before plan A, just in case. So it's just a way, it's a perspective. And again, most kids, they don't want to hear that. Most parents don't really want to hear that. If they're living vicariously through their kid, they don't want to hear that either. But that's the harsh reality. Right. Not everybody's going to play professional sports.
That's right. That's right. Or you could have an injury. You could be the greatest of all time and have an injury, and then you're gone. You're out. And then what are you going to do? You sit in front of the TV, TV dinner, and then watch sports. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah,
you do.
Yeah,
I've seen it happen on TV. I don't know. But absolutely, you got to plan. It is so important. And that's not just in a career as an athlete. That's in life in general.
Absolutely.
And here's the argument that I get, and I'm sure you've heard this too. Well, if I'm so busy focusing on plan B and plan C, then I can't put all of my effort in plan A. And I think about that, and I think, well, that's kind of true, but I wouldn't go that route. That's not something that would make me feel safe. What do you say to people who have that argument? I only want to focus 150% on plan A.
And I would, and it's funny you say that, because, yeah, I've heard that as well. Here's the interesting thing about that. Too much of anything is not good, right? So if you put 150% in weight training because you want to be the best, you know, power lifter that ever lived, that's not going to be good either. So it has to be a balance of some sort. And when we talk about balance, we talk about levels. Everything has levels to it. So I always tell young people, listen, there's only 24 hours in a day. So let's not put 18 of those hours into just training for your particular sport. Let's break this up a little bit. Once they start to understand that you can also put some equal value into studying, equal value into another, you know, potential career, as well as being a good football player, basketball player, baseball, or if you study in the arts, you know, you want to be an entertainer. You can do that. I think what happens is no one tells them that consistently enough, and they believe you have to put in 18, 19, 20 hours in one thing, and you don't develop anything else. So it really, the messaging has to come across from the top down that, no, you have to be able to do other things and put a timeline on this where you are spreading it out versus overkill, because that happens. You see kids in high school who train so hard, by the time they get to college, Priscilla, they're done. They're burnt out. I've seen that. They're burnt out. Parents got them going to 15 camps, 20 camps, 30 camps. And by the time these poor kids get to college, their bodies are just broken.
And the first question, so if somebody asks them, such as a coach or somebody trying to recruit them, what is important to you? Well, the first thing they're going to think about is the sport, but sports alone cannot define who a person is. Athletes, you're allowed to have a life apart from games. And you, if you don't, retirement kicks in. And from what I understand, most sports people fall into depression. And the depression is because they built their lives around sports alone. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to love only games and make your life around it, but it is essential to go beyond limits as an athlete and explore other possibilities in life. And I just really feel that sports enthusiasts, just you need to focus on teaching that to children more, so that a player can establish a connection to the real world. Because when you're the star of the football team, you kind of don't live in the real world. Once it's over, you got bills to pay. And my grandmother used to say, oh, honey, you better wake up and smell the bills, because once your life is over on the field, she'd tell my cousin that, who played football, she'd say, you better wake up and smell the bills, because once your career is over, if you make it that far, you need to be able to provide a life for yourself. And so that's that. I'm so glad that you as a motivational speaker, you include that. Speaking of which, you've had so many professions. Again, ex-professional football player, CEO of NatVision Entertainment, two-time best-selling author, documentary filmmaker, award-winning special education teacher, and motivational speaker. Can you take us in the order? Which came one after the other, starting with after you left professional football? Were you approached by people to start these particular professions, or were you the one who planned your next steps and just made it happen?
It's funny. Driven. I have a clothing line called Driven for a reason, and I'm so thankful for that. No, so I got to be honest with you. I was always driven to want to do just different things. So when I retired from playing, watching what was going on, even with my former agent, I just didn't like the way things looked. So I knew when I was done, I wanted to start an agency. I wanted to start a sports agency that really focused on community-based, you know, things and off the field, which made sense. So that's when I retired, when I got off, you know, went to Wall Street, the record business kind of started early. You know, I started that early, you know, for my wife and helping her reach her goals. And then in the midway of that, I started Nap Sports, which was my sports agency. Did that for 10 years. In lieu of doing that, it also led into motivational speaking, because as an athlete, I was doing that, you know, for at that time, maybe for a good 15 to 18 years, going out and speaking at schools and different places, corporate and high school level stuff. So in ethical level as well. So that was kind of intertwined at the same timeline. And then writing was always cool. I always enjoyed writing. So I started penning, you know, my first, like I said, manuscript. When I was in college, I would take notes and write little things down. So by the time I was done playing, it was the right time, I felt, to start writing. So I wrote my first book and released it back in 2006, Dream Real. But that was from ideas as a former athlete that I already had in the back of my mind. And it wound up being a real successful book. Truly, it was a document. It was really, inspired by my mom. You know what I mean? When people read that book, they'll get a clear understanding as to why I wrote it. All the teachings and the things that my mom gave me, all the goals and all those things, all the aspirations and push me to be the best that I can possibly be, no matter what I wanted to do, it comes out in that book. You know, these are my mother's teachings. This was my tribute basically to my mom. So that motivated me to continue to write and stay in that lane, because that's where, you know, comfort wise, you know, you have to have some other things, you know, that comfort you. And writing for me has always been there. And then the entertainment side, because of my wife, 25 years in this music entertainment industry, it kind of came natural. You know, everybody knows that they say most athletes want to be entertainers, singers, rappers, or whatever, and vice versa. Most rappers and singers want to be athletes. So it kind of intertwines all in one.
Right. Look at LL Cool J, yeah. Which, by the way, I don't know if anyone's ever told you, but I feel like I'm having an interview with LL Cool J. You talk exactly like LL Cool J. If people told you that before, right?
It's funny you say that. Yes.
You sound exactly like him.
Yes, I've heard that. It's interesting. Yeah, I like LL. I met him several times. I like LL.
I need love. Remember that song back in the 80s?
Absolutely.
I'm like, oh my God, I need love. I love that song. I am not a singer, as you can tell. Okay, so I wanted to congratulate you, because I believe you and your beautiful, multi-talented wife, Naya, you have a new show called The Nap and Naya Show. So for those who don't know about it, what is it about, and who is the audience? Who doesn't know about it now would say, hey, that sounds really cool. I want to start listening.
Yes, let me tell you something. About a year ago, maybe even a little bit more than that, Priscilla, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, the conversations that my wife and I would have, they're so organic and they're so real. And we would crack each other up. But funny stuff, just real open dialogue, you know, unscripted. So we went on Facebook about a year ago, and just to see how it would go. And every now and again, we would get on and we would call the Nap and Naya Show live on Facebook. And so many people tuned into that. It was like a lot. At one point, you know, 10,000, 12,000 people tuned into that thing. And we wouldn't do it regularly. We would just do it, you know, sparingly every now and again. But every time we came on, and it was conversations that are real, tangible conversations that people just enjoyed. Maybe things that people wouldn't, they may talk in private, but wouldn't talk about, you know, in person. Uh-huh. And we would just talk about these particular topics that people really, you know, connected with. So when we decided to do the Nap and Naya Show, thank God, a good friend of mine, his name is JC. He actually is the CEO of the network that we're on, OSM Team OSM TV. It's his own platform. So he's been telling me for the last year, come on, hey, Nap, man, you got to come on. You and I got to do this. Let me do this in my studio. We'll put it out on my platform and let's see how it goes. And that's what we decided to do. Finally, I said, you know what, JC, let's do it. So we did the deal with him about a month, maybe 2 months ago. And we went ahead and we started shooting and filming the episodes. And I tell you what, I thank God for it. It's a blessing because, like I said, it's not scripted. It's an unscripted show. It's an unscripted format. It's a 30-minute format. We're about to start having guests come on. And I think it's good because it allows people to, our audience is anyone who just likes to have real tangible conversations. They like to have them and they like to listen to them. So that's the audience. That's really the audience. It could be anybody. It's not a demo. It's not demo to a specific age group. It's just us having a good time talking about real tangible things.
Oh, I can't wait. When I was doing my research, I just found out about it because I just started focusing on it. And I said, oh, I got to listen to that. But
Tuesday, by the way, I'm sorry. Every Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yes, Eastern Standard Time. And the website is called teamosmtv.com. Team O is an Oh, shoot. What? Oh, is in Orchard. Oh, that's a terrible word. Oh, my. Team OS is in SamMTV.com, and that would be the Nap and Naya show. And everybody has to tune in. Now, you have another podcast called Napoleon's Corner. Tell us what it's about and how we can listen to it.
Definitely. Napoleon's Corner, again, great concept. I've had that for a while. It was a written show at first. Good friend of mine, Skylar Callahan, has a deal with Sports Illustrated, and I do the College Game Day show along with him during the football, the collegiate football seasons. And it just kind of flipped naturally where from the written portion of it, he said, man, listen, I would love for you to just do your Napoleon's Corner live on the Sports Illustrated platform. You know, obviously it's I come up with the topics and it's just me sitting in front of the camera. And again, talking about different life lessons, critical thinking things, sports, you know, sports related things. But that's on every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as well. And that's on the Sports Illustrated platform, which it's sponsored by them. And it's just great topics. Priscilla, we have a ball. We have a ball. He tapes it. It's up every Wednesday. Right now, I'm on episode 30. Well, 34 is done. So I'm taking a little bit of a break. We went through 34 straight episodes. So God willing, at the end of August, we'll be back in production on that. And then it'll run right into the college season because this is my second year going into the College Game Day show, once again, which is sponsored by Sports Illustrated. So it's on both. The Napoleon's Corner and the College Game Day show is sponsored by Sports Illustrated on their platform.
So if we wanted to go there right now, would we, what website will we go to, or what's the best way to get a direct link to it?
Sure. Once the show is taped, usually they send me the link and I normally send it out to everybody. So I put it on all my social media platforms. There is the www.sportsillustrated.com site, that link. If you click that link, it toggles down to the West Virginia Maven site, which that's the site that they sponsor, and all of my episodes will be there.
Okay. And we can't forget teamosmtv.com. Now, if someone wants to be a guest on your show, is the website, does that allow someone to submit?
Oh, yes. You're going to laugh at this because, Priscilla, I'm going to put you on the spot real quick because I want you to call in to be a guest on the Nap and Naya show. We're going to start going live within the next 2 to 3 weeks. I will definitely hit you to see if I can book you. I know you're busy, but I want you on our show. It'll be a live call-in show.
Love it. I am there. I am there. Is it a remote telephone, or do you do the Zoom thing?
It'll be remote. It'll be telephone.
Telephone. Good. Okay. So people, there you can have you can look like hell and you can still be a guest on Eugene's show. So don't be tripping that you got to be on Zoom. I love it. Oh my gosh, I would be so honored to be on your show. My goodness gracious. And I want to promote it on all of my sites as well with your permission. So I would love to
thank
do
you.
That.
Oh yes, please, please do. Absolutely.
If you talk about anything, that's my forte. I can talk about many topics. Oh my gosh. Okay, so let's make sure we get all of your sites out there. So you are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube.
Yes.
Is it under your name only, Eugene Napoleon?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And, and like you said earlier, branding is so important. You know, I did the Inside the Jersey Eugene Napoleon documentary. That's on Amazon Prime currently. In about a month or so, it'll be on probably, I believe, about 13 other platforms. But the funny thing about that is I heard you say this earlier, and it's so very true. When people don't know, maybe, and even if they do know who you are, it has to be some level of consistency. So you'll notice if you Google my name, Eugene Napoleon, everything will pretty much pop up in just different areas of what I'm doing, but it'll be consistent some way, shape, or form. It'll be linked to my name.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. Good. Yes. And let me, now you got to share with us, do you have a nickname
I do. NAP. N-A-P.
What is it?
NAP. As, yes, the first three letters of our last name. NAP. Uh-huh.
NAP. God, I thought you said NIP. I'm like, NAP. You are not a nip of a man. You're a mess of a man. So NAP is good. All right, everybody. Well, I tell you, I don't know if anyone loves this man more than me right now, but I adore him and his beautiful wife. You've got to check out her website. She is not only beautiful, but she has the voice of a songbird. She is a beautiful singer. Let's give a shout out to her. What is her website, Nap? I'm going to call you Nap now.
Absolutely. No, that's fine. So you can find her. It's at www.nyanapoleon.com.
Yes.
All and one word.
Go to Facebook and look at her songs on the YouTube channel. One of them, I believe that you, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you were producer of, which is the 304 song, right?
Now, the funny thing is, Kenny Black, the Music Machine, Grammy-nominated producer, produced the track. She actually wrote that song for my Inside the Jersey Eugene Napoleon documentary. And 304 is the area code of Morgantown, West Virginia. Ah. So that's where the 304 came from. And I was so blown away and honored that she wrote that song in behalf of the state of West Virginia and for my documentary. So shout outs to my beautiful wife, Naya.
Naya! All right, honey, will you get in contact with me about being a guest? I would love to. Everybody check out his show. It is on now, teamosmtv.com. Our time is over. I want to thank you from the bottom of my big little heart. Thank you so much, Eugene, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and I look forward to talking to you again. And thanks again. This was awesome. Appreciate
you. Yes, and you got to be a guest again next year. That's it. So we're going to have all kinds of exciting things to talk about. I'm going to beg you next year to be a guest. Say goodbye to your fans.
Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. I appreciate you all. Love you all. Let's go Mountaineers.
Woo! We'll see you next week on Question Reality. Bye!
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.